Welcome to another episode of Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
And we got started a little later than usual on this Thursday because I had to do adult things.
Yeah, you did.
That didn't sound right, actually, now that I said it.
I mean, but it's true.
Yes.
Taxes are adult things.
Yes, but saying that I was doing adult things and without any context there, that sounded pretty bad.
Yeah. But don't worry, it was taxes.
Yeah, it was taxes. I didn't get much money. It's okay. Whatever. Life goes on.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yes, I had to do errands. Let's just say that. I ran errands today. My day was full of errands. And therefore, we're getting started here with the sun going down on this podcast day. Which is weird for our podcast.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yes, but I'm used to seeing the sun.
Yeah.
It makes me happy.
But at least when we upload this podcast, the Sabres game will be starting in an hour.
Cool! Speaking of things that don't make you happy, I just talked about the sun. There's no more sun for the day. Oh, and on top of that, now we get to see the Sabres against Chicago. Great! Thanks, Frank. You're just a bundle of joy. Yes. All right, anyway. Well, I mean, I guess we might as well start there, right? You just said it.
Yeah.
I was trying to talk less hockey for this podcast, but no, we have to start with it because you decided.
I mean, we don't
have to.
With
your Sabres beanie and your Sabres hoodie on and you mentioning the Sabres game right away that I guess we got to do this. Let's just rip this Band-Aid.
Do you want to talk about the combine first? Do you want to talk some Bills first?
I want to talk about things that don't piss me off the minute that I talk about them, like how Vladimir Sobotka is going in the lineup for Johan Larson instead of for Zemgus Girgensons, who is the only player that I trust less to put a puck in the net than Vladimir Sobotka is Zemgus Girgensons. At least Phil Housley didn't take Casey Nelson out of the lineup.
Yeah.
That's a frickin' fantastic move. He's so concerned about lefties and righties, and maybe he actually just saw with his own two eyes, Casey Nelson's better than Matt Hunwick. I should put Casey Nelson in tonight with Zach Bogosian coming back. Could you imagine Nelson playing as well as he did against the Oilers and then
he sits
and then he for sits Bogosian just because the team lost?
Yeah.
The eye roll would have been so hard. Everyone would have gotten a headache.
So that's okay. So yeah, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
So I was thinking about Housley and the way he's coaching, the way he puts a lineup together and everything the last couple days.
And did yesterday. You want to put your head through a wall?
No. Here's the so because I came up
why not?
Because I came up with this question. I was coming up with questions. How much experience attributes to coaching success, and what attributes to coaching success? And this doesn't have to just be in hockey. This could be in sports in general. And honestly, once again, I still will ask the same question too. If there's another coach behind the bench, how differently are they running the team?
Honestly, we don't know. The greatest thing
so you
about
can't
all
assume
this.
It, but you can't assume it will be better.
Yes, but you can't assume that it will be the same either.
No, I would expect a little change, a little bit difference, but overall, I don't think the results would be extremely better. Like you could put. I will go on the record and say you could put Joel Quenneville behind the bench from the beginning of this season, and the Sabres are probably still close to where they are right now. I mean, I think they would be better, but not by much. Like the Sabres have 68 points right now. Let me double check this. They're 68 points, and they're 11 points behind wild card two. Let's say if Joel Quenneville's behind the bench at any point this year, they're probably closer to where they're probably leapfrog Philly right now.
That's great. Then you'd be in.
Then you would, but then you're still like 5 points back.
That's realistic, at least.
I don't think this is as far as realistic as well. That's the thing.
11 points means you're not in this anymore.
It depends.
Especially since, and I'll bring up Monday's stat here, you haven't won back-to-back games since December 13th, a feat that Ottawa and Detroit have done 3 times each.
I know. That's why I say I think they would be better, but it wouldn't be by much. 6 points is not a lot. 6 points is just one good week.
Yeah, and can the Sabres have one of those?
No.
Because they can't have a good 2 games.
I mean, they can have 2 good games.
No, they cannot.
It's just they win one of them. And
they
then
do not.
Couple things go wrong
they
in the other game.
They do not. They do not have a good 2 games. Hell, they don't have a good 1 game. I'm thinking to myself, 3-1 against Edmonton. Good first period. I think they got this. They've got this. There's no way that they're going to go ahead and mess this up. 1 period later. They actually messed this up. How are they losing? Like, they didn't even need the third period to choke it. They did everything hell and high water to make sure it could get tied, and it just didn't happen. And you know what? I guess you deserved it, because you can't go on that kind of a collapse. This team...
I still thought they played well against Toronto last Saturday.
That's great. They still lost 5-2.
Because of 2 unlucky goals.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I really do. I really do think that Toronto got lucky in that game.
But then you also would take away the empty netter as a result. So it's really a 2-2 game.
Great. You still didn't score as many as them.
I always get the frustration. I get it.
There's nothing that we can do about it this year because there is nothing outside. Like, the second line is finally kind of showing up.
Yeah.
The secondary scoring is kind of getting there now. Sometimes you're getting Sherry potting points up.
There isn't.
Mittelstadt is doing things for you again. You're getting production, but it's not all there.
No, it's not.
And even by a period-by-period basis, it's not all there.
And this is something that we knew at the beginning of the year. We knew this. We said, we were talking about the beginning of the year. This is a team that's going to be fighting just for a wild card spot from day one.
Well, that fight's done. I'm calling it.
Well, you can call it.
I said, once you start getting to the point where you're flirting with the Rangers in points, it's over. New York is 4 points back of Buffalo.
Yep.
I'm calling it. We're done. I'm not talking about playoffs the rest of the year because it's just not feasible. It doesn't make sense to anymore. This season is now about how much better can Casey Mittelstadt look? What can you do with Rasmus Dahlin getting better minutes? Is Brandon Montour going to get paired with Dahlin? I'd like to see it.
Yeah.
But Casey Nelson's played so well with Dahlin that it's okay if Montour's not there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you do want to see if Montour can handle top pairing minutes after you paid a first and a prospect for him.
I think so.
And you've got 15 games to try things out. Here's the disappointing part. Just like the rest of this season, we're not going to find out. We're not going to find out any of this because Phil Housley won't experiment with it.
And I don't think other coaches would too if they were in the same spot because mathematically they're still in it. It doesn't matter if they're 11 points
out. What about the last 7 games when they finally are mathematically eliminated?
Then you would talk that.
I still don't believe that it'll happen. I still think that they'll still put a young guy in the press box instead because reasons.
But if that doesn't happen,
Girgensons gets to continue to skate with his less than Vladimir Sobotka amounts of goals.
I know.
And you still get to see the same old thing for the rest of the season, playing out the string.
I will say this.
And they still somehow won't end up winning 2 games in a row. I really pissed off a spring with that.
Yeah, you
and
did.
And my hand hurts.
I will say this. Even when the Sabres are mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, I mean, officially eliminated and everything, I still don't expect them to make any call-ups.
No, because Rochester's
doing
in
well.
The thick of things.
Yeah. And you want them to succeed.
Hell, they might win their division.
Please. That'd be great. But
you'd like to see some NHL games.
Yeah. But I'll still go on the record and say I don't think another coach would do things so much different than what Housley's doing now, because I don't think the team's just good enough. That winning streak gave the city hope and promise that things were different here with this team.
Hope is the enemy. Never love anything.
But as what happens with teams who play above their means, they're going to play below their means too. And what it's really showing is that 10-game winning streak was played way above their means. Even if they weren't playing the best hockey, they were still winning games way above the means. And now what we've seen the last 3 months is way below their means. Things that are happening in the 10-game winning streak, they're not getting now.
Like a save?
Like goaltending. Yeah, goaltending has not been great. It was great. It was almost elite. They were getting elite goaltending from two goalies during their winning streak. At one point, Linus Ullmark and Carter Hutton were both in the 920s in save percentage.
In a year where save percentage has been down as a whole.
Yeah. And now Hutton's at 910 and Ullmark's at 909.
And they're getting like an 88% at even strength.
Yeah.
Which is dreadful.
But still, overall, Hutton and Ullmark have been close to the average. I want to say the league average for save percentage is around 911, 912, somewhere around there. So they're overall, they're there. But yeah, they have not. But yeah, the trend has not been right. They've been trending down.
Yeah, it just.
But I don't think. But that's the thing. I don't think any amount of coaching fixes it. This isn't a problem where the coach is holding the team back. This isn't Philadelphia. This isn't Anaheim where the coach is the problem. There's multiple factors that have to get looked at.
One of those factors though?
And that's the question. And that is the ultimate question.
I have an answer
because
for that.
If coaching is holding this team, is part of the reason why this team is not where they are right now, then as we said on the last podcast, Botra's going to have a long talk with Housley about it and see if they are still going in the same direction.
I truly think if they don't win two games in a row at any point for the rest of this season, I'm not going to predict any odds on Housley staying or going.
That's fair. That's fair to think. That's completely fair.
As a matter of fact, I can't. There's what, 15 games left?
Yes.
I can't trust them to win five of them right now. And there's Detroit and Ottawa twice each.
Yeah. That's understandable. It really is.
And if that happens, There's got to be halfway decent odds that Housley's not here next year.
And that would only happen if Botra has talks to Housley and thinks, yeah, he's not. We're not in the same direction. We're not seeing eye to eye anymore. If Botra truly thinks that, he's gonna fire Housley. He's gonna let him go. But if they still see eye to eye, and you trust what Botro, and you like what Botro has been doing at as GM, you like what he's done the last couple of years in the draft, you're fine with the moves he's made, with the trades he's made. You know, you love the Skinner trade. You question the O'Reilly trade, but questionable trades happen all the time. You like the trade for Montour. You wish they would have gotten a guaranteed first out of Kane, but you ended up getting lucky with that, and that happens. You like the Sherry trade because they didn't give up a lot to get a top nine player. If you trust your GM and he trusts the coach, are you going to trust the coach as well?
I will say this. If Halsey's back next year, there better be some changes to the staff.
I would like to
see
something.
Your power play is infuriating. Yeah. Your defense is suddenly all sorts of whack. Your goaltending is mediocre at best for most of this. Oh, and you saw your former starting goaltender become a Vezina candidate with another team. Maybe goaltending coach Andrew Allen has some questions that has to be answered too. Leonard was a positional mess, and now in New York he is steady.
I think that's different.
You can clear your head from substances and all this.
Let's also remember too.
You can clear your head from those things, and you can clear your body from any sort of like, you know, alcohol abuse or anything like that. But at some point, coaching is going to play more factors into it than
that part attributes to Leonard because he's in a really good coaching system with Barry Trotz, and Mitch Korn is his goalie coach. Korn is probably the best goaltending coach in the world.
I get that, but you need to at least have better goaltending coaching going on here because what are we seeing with these two guys?
But why
right now?
Is it all? But we do we? How long has Andrew Allen been here? He's been over here for a while. Wasn't he here with Miller?
I don't think so.
I don't remember. When did Andrew Allen get here? I remember really liking him as a goalie coach, what he's been doing. And then Leonard leaves, and then he goes to Islanders, and all of a sudden, yeah, he's looking like he's playing like a Vezina candidate goalie. When he cleared his head, he's in a system that does not allow a lot of high danger shots in Barry Trotz and what in his defensive schemes. A lot of the saves that Leonard makes are like perimeter shots, just shots on the outside. So you can argue that that save percentage is a little skewed because of it. And also, I'm not ready to say that letting go of Leonard or anything like that. Definitely was not when he come in.
He came in, I think it was without Miller, because July 2015. Oh, yeah, that was a tank year, man.
That was right after the tank.
That was right after the tank year.
So he came in.
Archer's Urbay was the guy he replaced.
That's right. Allen came in right after the tank, right after
Allen came in with Bylsma's staff.
Yes. Okay. That makes sense. But
I'm going to guess you wanted to keep your goaltending coach around because you kept the same goaltender in Leonard.
Yes. And then after that, I mean,
things got significantly worse with Leonard in year three.
Yeah.
And Chad Johnson kind of just regressed.
I think there's a lot of other things. Plus, the thing with Leonard too is, and actually it's with the Islanders in general, are they going to be like this next year? And we don't know that. We don't know that with Leonard. We don't know that with the Islanders in general. Plus, Leonard's a free agent after this year too. He might see this year and think,
see this year and go, I don't know if I'm not going to get a better system than this.
But he's also going to look at it and think, I want to get paid.
And the Islanders don't have a John Tavares that they're paying, so there's cap there.
We'll see if
there's money to be had.
Yeah. So we'll see what. So those are factors that got to be taken in as well. And we don't know if how much of the same Islanders team is going to be there next year too, because they might Anders Lee and Brock Nelson are both free agents as well. And I want to say Eberle's either free agent this year or next year. And then soon they got to pay Matt Barzal. That's going to be a lot of money too.
I think they'll have money for Robin Leonard.
I think so. All right. But so that's why I came up with this question of what attributes to coaching success. And I think one of those answers is experience. And how much experience do you need to be successful?
Like experience even as an assistant?
Coaching experience. And it doesn't have to be in the professional level, just coaching experience. So a lot of coaches start out by coaching in high school, in junior hockey, in college. And then sometimes they get hired to work in the AHL and they become assistants there and then head coaches in the AHL. And then they come up and be head coaches in the NHL, or they come up and be assistants and then eventually head coaches. A guy like Barry Trotz. Barry Trotz went through the ranks. He coached in juniors. He was a head coach in the AHL in Washington's organization. And then when Nashville was established and they needed their GM, they hired David Poile, who was with Washington for a long time, and he brought Barry Trotz to be the first head coach of the team. And Barry Trotz has been NHL head coach ever since. A guy like Mike Babcock, he went through the ranks as well. He went through the ranks in juniors and all that, was a head coach in the AHL before he got his first gig with the Ducks back in the early 2000s.
I get where you're coming from on this.
But here's the thing. The research I did was coaches who have success. A lot of, like, I looked at almost all the coaches in the league into where did they come from. What I found was a lot of coaches have coached in the AHL at one point. Mike Babcock, I just mentioned. Barry Trotz, Mike Sullivan. Obviously, Dan Bylsma was as well. It's a lot. Paul Maurice, Peter Laviolette. But there's coaches, too, who have never coached in the AHL. Phil Housley's one of them. Phil Housley has been a coach since 2004. He's been a coach for 15 years. Nine of them was coaching high school in Minnesota. And then he became an assistant. He went right to the NHL, became an assistant in Nashville for 4 years before he got the Sabres head coaching gig. Who is it? Jim Montgomery in Dallas was a coach in college. And he was a head coach of the Denver Pioneers, who, you know, I think they won the Frozen Four a couple of years ago, and they were one of the best college hockey programs. And then he went right from as a head coach in college to a head coach in the NHL. David Quinn, he's the head coach of the Rangers. Same thing. I'm wrong with Quinn. But there are two Hall of Fame coaches. Aren't in the Hall of Fame yet, but they will be. Ken Hitchcock and Joel Quenneville. We all talk about Quenneville. He's a guy who has gone a similar path to Housley. Never coached in the AHL. Did little stuff like in juniors and everything. And then he went right to the NHL as an assistant. He was an assistant when Colorado won the Cup in 96. And then became the head coach of the Blues. And then he went back to Colorado and then eventually joined the Blackhawks as a scout. And then as their head coach, and the rest is history with him. So my biggest thing with, we talk about what Housley's doing and everything. I think the answer for Housley is just, it's very simple. And I was talking about it. He needs more experience as a coach. That's it. I think that might just be it.
It sounds troubling though.
It does. But when you see how he rose up, it becomes an outlier. He's only been an NHL coach since 2013. And yes, that's 6 years. Four of them were an assistant. He's now in his second year as a head coach. And before that, it was 9 years in high school.
It sounds very troubling.
It does.
Because now, like, what you're telling me now and what I'm taking from it is you think he's over his head.
And that's certainly what
it is. Because he's not experienced.
And that's something that we've kind of been alluding to, is that the job is getting too is getting over his head.
And you know what happens to guys like that?
They get fired. They get fired.
Because they fail.
But then they end up getting jobs in other places.
So we're going to be the bridesmaid, is what you're saying.
If you fire Housley now, I think eventually that might be where it goes down. A guy like Rick Tocchet, I think, is another great example. He retired as a player in 2002. He became a coach in 2002. Literally right after he retired, he became an assistant in Colorado. And he was an assistant in Colorado for a couple of years. He was assistant in with the Coyotes when Wayne Gretzky was there for a couple of years. Then he went to Tampa, where he eventually became the head coach of the Lightning, like when Stamkos was a rookie, right around that time. And then he got fired. And then he got fired from that. And then a few years later, he comes back as a coach, as an assistant in Pittsburgh, where back-to-back cups, and now he's the head coach of Arizona. And I think Rick Tocchet's path as a coach is a huge outlier, because he went right from a player to a coach in the same league in a matter of weeks after he retired. But it does seem like the job that Housley's in over his head with this job, because he doesn't have the experience. He doesn't have the experience. And that, I think, is where we talk about the staff. The staff needs to be better. They need to get, I think, the best thing for Housley and for the Sabres in tune.
Please keep talking while I cough, because then it points out every time you stop and I cough, it points out my cough.
Can't help it.
I get that it's courteous. Just keep going. Blanket it. Mask it. For the love of God.
Once again, can't help it. But I think
I can't help coughing.
I think the best thing to help Housley gain more experience as a coach, get him an assistant who's been a head coach in this league for a long time.
I was going to say, good thing you added that other part, because Davis Payne was a head coach.
Davis Payne was a head coach. Not that long, but he wasn't that long. I think a guy who is a head coach for a long time. We talk about Joel Quenneville. As fire Housley, hire Quenneville. How about offer Quenneville a job as an assistant?
Dude, come on.
You got to sell
him. Be real.
Sell it. You got to sell him the job.
Be real.
Listen.
You think you can get away with that? You know
if
who
you
gets
sell
a,
him?
You know who gets a job as an assistant coach? Not Joel Quenneville. Someone like Mike Yeo.
And eventually Mike Yeo became a head coach right after that.
He did it twice, actually.
Yeah.
I think, though, that Mike Yeo would be better served as a guy that would get that assistant job.
I think, but that's why I say sell the idea of it. Because there are two things that can happen with that.
Quenneville's way too established to go ahead and accept an assistant job.
Tell him if you offer.
I'm not even entertaining this idea.
I'm saying is pitch the offer.
I'm saying don't even try.
Why not?
Don't even try to tell me about this.
Why not?
Because what do you think is going to happen?
The worst thing that happens is he says no.
That's the expected thing, because you know what
that's
going to happen.
And yeah, that's the... And the
seven
you can,
head coaches...
What if he says yes?
Then we're the luckiest franchise in the world at that point.
But once again, take the chance. You're not losing anything by doing it.
I think your idea is crazy.
I think it is crazy too.
Because there are at minimum six other head coaching vacancies. Other than Quenneville, including Quenneville, there have been seven head coaches fired this year.
Yeah.
Seven.
I know. Yeah.
I will bet you ducks for dollars.
And we know he wouldn't go to one of the teams because that team fired him.
But there's six.
So there's six.
And I will bet you ducks for dollars, and I'm censoring myself here on this one, that there's no chance in hell. You'd get laughed out. He would laugh in your freaking face if you offered that to
okay,
him.
Big deal. Why does that matter?
Because you need to be taken seriously as a franchise.
How does that not make your franchise being not taken less seriously? You're offering a guy a job.
You're offering a guy a job when he knows he can get something else because he's established.
Okay.
He is a good NHL coach.
That's why I say sell him the job.
Sell him on. What are you selling him on? That house is going to get pressure. Fired after 2 months after less, a crap start?
Less pressure. Less pressure. All the pressure's on Housley, not him.
Oh, that's a healthy coaching office.
We all know that there's going to be pressure on Housley.
Yes. And if he gets off to a poor start,
you can fire Housley and name Quinville the interim coach.
It's
right away.
This is something that it's a dream scenario, Frank. You're
I think
about,
it is.
You're
but
talking
it's
about a dream, and, I'm telling you right now, you need to stop talking about the dream.
But it's happened. It's something that has happened.
This isn't Shia LaBeouf. Don't let your dreams be dreams. No, this is a dream, and I need to stop you before you even try to convince anyone
it is
that
a
it
dream
could be
scenario.
A possibility. It's
it is
not.
It is a dream scenario.
It's a dream.
But you mentioned Mike Yeo. Mike Yeo was fired as coach of the Wild. He comes on as an assistant with Ken Hitchcock in St. Louis because the talk what at the time was Hitchcock's going to leave at some point because he's old and he's going to retire.
They were doing retirement prep.
And then it happened. And then he ended up resigning anyway. They ended up hiring Hitchcock's replacement as an assistant so that they didn't have to go through the hiring process.
I'm feeling insulted even having to have this conversation. For Joel Quenneville, I'm feeling insulted. I feel like I need to kick your fridge foot.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
That's how stupid this is. I'm trying to tell you right now, stop. Because it's not something we even need to talk about. It's a dream. You're not hiring Joel Quenneville as an assistant.
I don't think so as
well. You can kiss the whitest part of my ass.
But all I'm saying is just pitch the idea to him. Just give him an offer. The worst. Why not bother doing something when you don't know when that outcome of it is more closer to 50-50?
It's not.
But you don't know that.
It is not. You have a better chance of firing Housley now and hiring Quenneville as the head coach after the season is over than you do about hiring
Probably.
Quenneville as an assistant
But what if you? But then what if we go down the Mike Babcock road again, where you fire your coach, you're going for this guy, and he ends up going somewhere else, and then it's like, what do you do? You don't have a head coach now.
You have a head coach. It's just not Joel Quenneville.
I mean, yeah, we talked about
I'm
Chris
telling
Taylor.
You that you're
we've
asking,
talked about Chris Taylor.
You are asking a genuine Hall of Fame head coach to take an assistant coach job.
I'm just saying is you can't be.
Allow me to go ahead and tell you again how
I'm just saying
nut-kickingly stupid this is.
I'm just saying is what is the worst thing that can happen if you just try? The chances of him taking a head coaching job for another team is much higher. Yes,
I agree.
It's
not much higher. It's a guarantee.
It doesn't have to be, though.
You know what? I will eat.
I don't think Quenneville's coming.
I will eat a carrot if Quenneville takes an assistant coach job anywhere next season.
Okay.
Shake it.
Shake.
Right now. I'll eat a freaking carrot.
Okay.
You can kiss the whitest part of my ass. There's no way it's happening. No, that's not your side of the bet, by the way.
No, it's not happening.
That's gross.
Yes.
I'm using it as a strong metaphor here. But you could still kiss the whitest part of my ass for even pitching this.
I know it's crazy to think.
You can go ahead and...
I know.
Your side of the bet is going to be... You have to go ahead and try to do wheelies on Heelys down the sidewalk for 10 seconds.
Okay. Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
We got to get
Heelys. We're going to have to get Heelys then.
All right. To eBay we go. I will gladly pay for this spectacle.
Okay.
Just like how you will probably buy the carrot.
Yeah.
I didn't negotiate it down to being a baby carrot. I'm an idiot.
No, he didn't. It's going to be a regular carrot.
Can it be a baby carrot?
No.
Damn it.
No.
Wait, what am I worried about? Quenneville's not going to take an assistant job.
Why should you be worried? I'm just saying it's the worst thing that happens is he says no. Why is it that bad?
Or should I have you take a Razor scooter to the ankle?
I mean,
there is nothing worse in this world.
Stepping on a Lego? As Derek currently ponders.
You haven't had your ankle hit by a Razor scooter, have
yes,
you?
Yes, I have.
I feel like it's worse than stepping on a Lego.
I don't know.
You feel like your ankle has died. You feel like your soul died when that happens.
I mean, I've had like the bike pegs hit me in the ankles too. That really hurts.
That's my point.
I'm just saying
you should be very.
If you're not gonna fire Housley after this season, but you're gonna be thinking about it come next season. You have to make sure you have a replacement. And if you don't think it's Chris Taylor who's in the AHL from Rochester, where is that head coach going to come from? Quenville's going to have a job next fall.
Yeah, and it's not going to be as an assistant.
But I understand.
It's not going to be as an assistant.
But that's why I say it doesn't hurt to at least try.
It's hurting my ears hearing this.
Like I said, we agree. The worst thing that happens is he says no, right? That's the worst thing.
The worst thing is you look like a joke of an organization.
How?
Because it's insulting.
You assume that's
the case. He just goes, lol, no.
Yeah, that's all. He'll just say no. And you're just like, all right.
And then no one takes your franchise seriously.
How? How does no... You're offering, yes, he's one of the... Because hockey
is a boys' club. That's why.
Yeah,
is it bad that it is? Yes, it is bad that it is.
And you know what? The people who will laugh at you are the dinosaurs of the league. And why should you take them seriously? I'm just saying
someone has probably immediately closed out our podcast the minute you said this.
Probably.
And I don't blame them. Speaking of Quenville, by the way.
I'm just saying you got to have ideas. You got to have different things you want to do.
And I'm saying that you are going to try to go ahead and recreate something from your past. Because we talked about this before the podcast.
Yes.
Because speaking of Quenville, he was fired by Chicago.
Yes.
Speaking of the Sabres, they play Chicago tonight. The Sabres haven't won in Chicago since 2007.
Yeah.
What were you doing back in 2007?
I was in eighth grade.
And?
This was... It was 06, 07 season, right? The year they won the President's Trophy?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, I was in eighth grade.
Okay.
And you mentioned Heelys. Yes, I had Heelys. I had a pair of them. I wore them a lot.
Look at this nerd with his Heelys.
I saw the commercial for them when they first came out, and I was like, I need them.
You stupid. Everybody has. You stupid kid.
Yes, I was a stupid kid. Because they are one of the reasons why I lost one of my teeth.
And validated on the stupid kid remark.
What were you doing in 2007?
Your mom.
Come on.
Okay, get over here, Mr. Joel Quenville, the assistant coach.
You know, the only reason you said that is because
you used that I joke on it. Me off the air. Yes, I know. That's why I thought it would be a great idea.
I know. No, it was great.
I was suffering torn cartilage in my knee, on my right knee, in 2007, and being in crutches,
playing
football at ECC.
Yeah, playing college ball. At ECC.
And I didn't know what to do with my life.
Yeah.
Because football was effectively over.
Mm-hmm.
I was no longer an athlete in college. And I didn't know what to do.
Well, define athlete for you.
I played college ball. That's being an athlete. Even a kicker in college ball is an athlete.
No, I know where I'm going at with that.
That I'm not good at hockey? I know.
You're not an athlete.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. That ended when I was 19. In 2007, when I busted my knee up. And I didn't know what to do with my life. I had no direction. I actually skipped college the next year. Because in addition to then busting up my knee, I then broke my hand the subsequent summer. So I was dealing with medical issues, so I didn't go back to college for a whole year.
Yeah, but you did that. Didn't you do that on your own? Because, like,
yes.
You were mad about yes. football? Yes.
I was mad about something else.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, that was me. I was in crutches the last time the Sabres beat Chicago in Chicago.
I was riding around on Heelys.
And you were losing a tooth riding around on Heelys. Which one's dumber? Which one hurt more and which one's dumber? Those are different questions with different answers.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Oh, I look back at that now and I think, why did I buy Heelys? Why did I want them?
Because you saw the commercial.
Yeah, I saw
them. You were like, I gotta have these.
Yeah, apparently. Everyone has that one thing, like when they were kids, and it's like you see the commercial, and you're like, I want it. You don't even care what it is. You want it. Me, when I was 12, it was Heelys.
Dumbass.
I mean, what stupid things do you get?
I don't even know or want to talk about it.
You sure? We're talking. You got to mention something.
I don't know because I have so many stupid, impulsive decisions in my life. I cannot keep track.
Now,
and I have concussion history. I definitely do not remember these things. I do not remember a lot of me being 12 and 13 years old. I do not. I will be entirely real with you.
And that's an answer that we'll have another day.
Sure. When it comes up in my nightmares.
Yeah.
Being an idiotic kid.
Yeah. Or just ask your parents.
I could do that. But I don't know if my father will remember these things as he has concussion issues and history. Don't get concussions, kids.
Yeah, they suck.
Don't ride around on Heelys.
Yeah.
You probably got head trauma from that you don't necessarily know is a concussion or not.
Could be from other things, too.
You fell on your face and broke a tooth. There's head trauma there.
Yeah. Broke two. When I fell on my face.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I hit my face against the car.
I think the dumbest
with concussion. With the Heelys on.
The dumbest concussion I ever had was.
Oh, my God.
You hit a car. You hit your mom's car.
I was riding around my Heelys, was trying to stop in front of my mom's car so I can open the door and go in, and didn't stop.
You were trying to look smooth?
Yes.
The only one that I can guarantee you is worse is that I was on a boat and I tried doing the worm. Two problems. One, I can't do the worm.
Two, you're on a boat.
Two, the boat hit a wave and it didn't matter because three, I can't do the worm. And I may or may not have just face planted on the deck of this boat. And I immediately asked, I turned my friend and I asked him, I'm like, how are my eyes looking? Like, pretty big. I'm like, oh, great. I've got a concussion. This is going to be a fun night.
Oh, my God. I mean, concussions suck, but that's hilarious.
Yes. And you did, and the difference here is I was not a kid for that one. You want to know why?
You were 17.
The year was 2007.
So the last time Sabres beat Chicago in Chicago, you were busy on a boat. Attempting to do the worm.
In North Carolina.
In North Carolina and getting a concussion instead.
Yes.
Okay. And I was attempting to be smooth riding Heelys and ended up face planting into my mom's car. And losing a tooth.
Welcome to the Leftovers Podcast.
Yes. You've made
this. This is completely on brand.
It is.
All right. Let's end it with some football talk.
Yeah.
Okay. We went more on the Sabres than I thought we would because somebody decided to say something about Joel Quenneville being the assistant, and now we made a bet.
All right.
And I was, and all that was just coming based on Housley needing more experience
as a coach. The Bills are after a pair of high-profile offensive linemen, and I'm all for it.
I'm all for it, too.
Matt Paradis, the center from Denver, and Daryl Williams, the offensive tackle from Carolina. Several reports are coming out that the Bills are interested in both of those guys. Benjamin Albright reporting on Paradis, and Jason Lockanfora on Daryl Williams.
What's making it more interesting, too, is now Pouncey with Pittsburgh just re-signed, and he's getting $11 million a year.
That might set the market for centers.
Yes.
Because Maurkice Pouncey has been one of the best, most consistent centers throughout his career.
Yes.
So $11 million per year for Matt Paradis in free agency. Would you take it with the Bills cap situation?
I would do it. You need a center. You need a reliable guy to work with your quarterback. The most important thing about this offseason for the Bills, and it, the way it sounded like it's where they're going, is protecting Josh Allen. As big as a quarterback that he is and how well he can move, you don't want to risk it, him getting injured because of it, or injured again.
Because he's constantly running for his life.
Exactly. You don't want that.
Well, he got injured in the pocket. Let's be real about something.
Need to protect him.
Yeah, let's state the facts as facts, though.
Yes.
He was injured in the pocket, and that is something that you have to go ahead and remember and establish.
But the likelihood of him getting injured in the pocket versus him getting injured when he's running, he's more likely to get injured when he's running.
Yes.
So the most important thing for the Bills this offseason is to protect Josh Allen and get guys who can help protect him
on
the line.
And two of your worst positions were at the right side on tackle. You've wanted to replace Jordan Mills for a while now.
Yeah.
And finally you get a chance to. And the interior of our offensive line last year was just garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that could be fixed with a strong presence at center.
Yes.
I think I'd prefer to get Paradis over Williams.
If
I had to have one, I'm picking the center.
I think so too. I think you're absolutely right.
Because I remember
it's
when
the
Alex,
most important position on the offensive line.
I remember when Alex Mack was traded from Cleveland to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like a sign and trade kind of thing. He was a restricted free agent of sorts. Cleveland didn't want to match the deal, and they managed to move him so that they got something for him. Matt Ryan publicly stated that one of the biggest things that helped the offense turn it to another level was the arrival of Alex Mack. Russell Wilson has seen his offensive line improve at least a little bit when mm-hmm. center Max Unger was traded for Jimmy Graham. No, wait, that's the other way around. The Saints' offensive line stabilized when Max Unger went to Seattle in exchange for Jimmy Graham.
Yeah.
And Russell Wilson's running for his damn life because he doesn't have a center.
Because he doesn't have an offensive line.
Travis Frederick gets drafted by the Cowboys. We all laugh at it. And next thing you know, the Cowboys come up with one of the better offensive lines in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And without him last year, that line was not as good.
And even the Bills saw stable line because of Eric Wood.
For years.
Yeah.
They weren't terrible on the offensive line because Eric Wood was there.
Yeah, exactly. And
they
had
some bad players on the offensive line, and they looked better when Eric Wood was there.
Exactly. That's why if the center position is the most important position on the offensive line.
He's establishing your protections.
Yes. So you want a guy who's got... You want to get a guy who's got experience and who's well-known.
I won't say the center is the most important position, but it's definitely top two because your left tackle's got to be able to stop pass rushers.
I agree, but you know what? I think
they
the center's
also probably get financially compensated more for that reason.
For their sheer
athleticism.
But you know what? But I think that might attribute to centers are just that much underappreciated because they're the ones that get the ball to the quarterback every play. They're the ones. The centers are usually the leaders of the offensive line too because they're up front.
They're the ones establishing the protection. They are the ones establishing calls.
So I think
identifying the mic with the quarterback, working out those sorts of things.
You're right there, exactly with that. So I think the center is more important.
It's mentally tougher as a center,
exactly.
Than it is as a left tackle,
exactly. So in this case, you're gonna get a center for your now second year starter. Starting quarterback, you're pretty much a franchise guy. Get a guy who's got experience, who's been around, and he's going to want to get paid. Pay him because you need a guy like that. They can still draft a guy if they want to, But you need a you need to get somebody who's established if you want to help your young quarterback out. And you've you talked about the left tackle being very important as well. Deion Dawkins is there. And if he as long as he and I think and a guy
if they sign Darrell Williams, which one goes to the right side? I would say I would nominate Williams before Dawkins.
Williams on the left side or Williams on the right?
On the right.
Okay.
I would keep Dawkins on the left side because
I'd be fine with that.
I figured something out a little bit with offensive linemen. Sometimes you have to draft that right tackle only because he's played right tackle and he's used to that movement.
Yeah.
You try to shift a guy to the other side, next thing you know, you get a Cyrus Kwanjo. Kwanjo worked a lot on the left side at Alabama. They tried to throw him at right tackle and he was a mess. He was a disaster. He became at least backup capable on the left side for the Bills in his career. And your final and my final question is this though. If the Bills get Paradis and they get Darrell Williams, what do you think they should go at nine? Because it's not going to be an offensive lineman.
I think you go tight end.
Really?
Yes.
You'd go Noah Fant.
Yes. As long as he's as assuming he's there.
I would actually say something that a lot of people are going to hate. I'd get one of these off. I mean, I'd get one of these defensive linemen.
You know what? I'm not against that. If as long as he's best player available,
that's probably what it's going
to
be.
Assuming, yeah, I'm kind of.
You're either
I'm
getting an edge rusher or a defensive tackle to be the best player available at nine.
Yeah, but but you know what?
Because someone's going to break my heart and take DK Metcalf.
Probably, I think so.
Is there such a thing as too jacked for a wide receiver?
You know,
are his muscles going to stop him from trying to catch a football?
You know what? I think that's
we're
a
about
lot
to
of
find
worry.
Out.
We're about to find out.
We're
but
about
I think,
to find out.
I think that's a big worry for a lot of teams.
That's a dumb worry. I think.
Well, you know what?
Kind of like Kyler Murray with the height story.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I think the big thing with DK Metcalf and Sal and Bulldog were talking about it earlier on their show today. I think a lot of the worry with Metcalf is he might be another David Boston. Where he's got all this hype, he does great at the combine, but now as you said, he might be but he does all this workout stuff, all this bodybuilding, and now he's too jacked to be a receiver because now he doesn't cut as much. He doesn't do it as quickly because he's got too much
muscle. I feel like someone like Metcalf though and like his training staffs,
I think it would depend on who
would
he went
figure
to.
Out what to do because they've seen the failures of David Boston and therefore
as
find
long
ways
as they're
to look out of
as
it.
Long as they're guided in that direction.
Yes, and I think that in DK Metcalf's best interest, they're going to work toward his best interests.
Yes,
they're going to work towards.
I think
can you
in
be a better receiver?
I think we're in agreement on this, though.
I think it's if ridiculous they, of a notion that someone could be too jacked for a position.
Sure, I think we're in agreement on this, though. The Bills get both of those offensive linemen. And they're not going that at nine. When they come up at nine, just get best player available. If that's a defensive lineman or an edge rusher, okay. If that's DK Metcalf, great. If that's Noah Fant, great. Just get the best player.
Yep.
And then you got your other draft picks that you can use to get guys as well because the receiving class is not that bad, and the tight end class is really good too.
Both of them are considered deep.
Yeah, so you can get guys.
With one major player in the top 10, one being Metcalf and the other being Fant.
Yep. So. They're just those are the two number ones out of the entire class. But second, third round, even fourth round, you need a guy because you didn't get the top guy, get one there.
You're in luck because you're gonna get something there.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Leftovers Podcast, Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
And we yelled at each other a lot in this episode.
Yeah, we did.
I really just yelled at you. I'm not nice.
I mean, it happens more often than not.
Not really. We don't disagree that often. Not to this extent. And I also made you walk
out. I think it's because the Sabres are just pissing us off so much.
Yeah. And I also made you walk out of the room.
Yeah.
But that wasn't from being mad or arguing about
it. That was just you telling a stupid joke.
That was me telling a stupid joke that you started.
Yeah, that I said before the show.
It's a nice job. Yep. Thank you for handing me that ammunition.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening, if you're still listening. Appreciate it. And we'll be back on Monday. Sabres will have played a couple of games, including this one against Chicago tonight. And hey, UB, the conference tournaments for both men and women. I wonder what'll happen with those. UB plays its final regular season game on Friday.
And we'll see where they will be ranked heading into the tournament, heading into their conference tournament. In terms of like top 25.
Exactly. So we'll talk about UB a little bit on Monday as well.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. And, well, maybe the Sabres can actually do something that they haven't done in 12 years.